Someone has said that happiness is being married to your very best friend. And that's the way I feel. It's just a great privilege for Jack and me to be here and share with you. And we have two goals for you. One of them is that as a result of this weekend, you'll fall more and more in love with Jesus. And secondly, that you'll fall more and more in love with each other. A sign on a church bulletin board read, "God can mend a broken heart if you'll give him all the pieces." And we paraphrase that this evening because I know that as I look out to this audience with as many of you as are here, that some of you are hurting. There are areas in your marriages and in your lives that are not all you'd like for them to be. And so I'd encourage you that God can mend a broken marriage if you'll give him all the pieces. It's an exciting relationship we have with God, isn't it? And he has the answers. I'd like to start tonight with just a favorite cartoonist of mine is Charles Schulz, who is the cartoonist, as you know, of Peanuts. And this one is just classic of our subject for this evening. Peppermint Patty is walking along, and she's saying, "I don't know why I even think about him." And now she's sitting under a tree, and she says, "Chuck just doesn't seem to understand a girl's emotions. In fact, Chuck just doesn't seem to understand girls at all." And by this time, she's walking toward his house. And she says, "Chuck is hard to talk to because he doesn't understand life. He doesn't understand laughing or crying. He doesn't understand love and touching hands and silly talk and things like that. He plays a lot of baseball, but I doubt if he even understands baseball." And by this time, she's at his house and she's knocking at the door. And Charlie Brown sticks his head out the door, and Peppermint Patty says, "I don't think you understand anything, Chuck." And then she walks away. And Charlie Brown is left with a hopeless look on his face. And he says, "I don't even understand what it is I don't understand." Well, we have much to understand, don't we? We have to understand our partner's personality types. We have to understand the extrovert-introvert differences that most of us have. And then we have to understand our backgrounds, our hang-ups, our individual preferences. But one of the greatest things that we probably need to understand is the basic differences just between us as people, man-woman differences lots of times. Now, as I talk about these things, I want to get a couple of things very clear. Jack and I fall into pretty much, what some people would define as a typical man and a typical woman as far as how you react to things. But you may not find yourself falling into that category at all. And I don't want you to think that if you're not falling into the so-called womanly characteristics, that you're, as a woman, not feminine. You're, first of all, people, aren't you? And lots of times God has just changed these things about in a couple. And you will find, you men may find yourself identifying with how I am. And you women may find yourself identifying with how Jack is. And that's good. That's okay. Doesn't mean that you women are feminine you women are masculine or you men are feminine. It just means you may be special for a special purpose. For instance, we find men who have a very creative personality, melancholic type of temperament often. And lots of times they will identify with the sensitivity that lots of times women are more prone to be. Well, that you need that. So first of all, we want to say we're people. And what we're trying to get you to think about tonight is simply the fact that you will be different from the person that you met. Because God, in a wonderful way, made us to fit together. And if you're both alike, you're going to have the same strength, but you're going to have the same weaknesses too. And you're not going to complement one another and compensate for each other's weaknesses. So chances are, the way God created you two for each other, you're going to be different. And that's wonderful when we understand it. And it's very frustrating when we don't. And the very thing that attracted you to one another can be the thing that will drive you up a wall if you don't understand. So as we suggest these things, and as I kind of described Jack and me to you, our aim is so that you will be able to identify yourself and then identify your partner so that you can understand each other. And our prayer is that this will just spark your imagination and spark your reading and study about each other. It'll be a beginning of your study so that you really will understand one another. Ephesians 4:32 in the Phillips version says this: be kind to one another. Be understanding. Be as ready to forgive others as God, for Christ's sake, has forgiven you. And as Jack mentioned, if we would just practice this one little verse in our lives and in our relationship with one another, I could quit right now. Be kind to one another, it says. And most of us are least kind to those we're closest to. And then it says, be understanding. A man once said, a long life is barely enough for a man and a woman to understand each other. And to be understood is to love. The man who understands one woman is qualified to understand pretty well everything. And the reverse is true. The woman who understands one man is qualified to understand pretty well everything. And yet someone has said that when Adam was lonely, God created for him not 10 friends, but one wife. But we just lots of times don't understand each other. A book called From the Adventure of Being a Wife by Mrs. Peel says this. Now, this is mainly to you women, but you men can apply it too. If I could give one piece of advice to young brides, and only one, it would be this. Study your man. Study him as if he was some rare and strange and fascinating animal, which he is. Study his likes and dislikes, his strengths and weaknesses, his moods and mannerisms. Just loving a man is fine, but it's not enough. To live with one successfully, you have to know him. And to know him, you have to study him. Look around you and decide how many of the best marriages you know are ones where a wife, in a deep sense, actually knows her husband better than he knows himself. Knows what pleases him, knows what affects him, knows what makes him laugh or makes him angry, knows when he needs encouragement, knows when he's too charged up about something and needs to be held back, knows, in other words, exactly what makes him tick. Now, friends, that's a lifetime assignment, isn't it? To really study that person that God has led us to. To know him better than he knows himself, or to know her better than she knows herself. Do you really know your loved one like that? Are you willing to take that kind of time, that kind of energy, to give to this beautiful relationship that God has ordained? And remember that verse says, be kind to one another, be understanding, and then be forgiving. Be as ready to forgive others as God, for Christ's sake, has forgiven us. Well, how much has God forgiven us for Christ's sake? Everything. Totally. Are we really that kind of forgivers? Someone has once said that really a good marriage is simply the union of two awful good forgivers. And yet, we just don't forgive. A man once said, when we quarrel, my wife becomes historical. The other man said, don't you mean hysterical? And he said, no, I mean historical. She reminds me of everything I ever did. That's not forgiveness, is it? Because to forgive is to forget, to put it away. And of course, that takes divine help, doesn't it? There's no way we can do this without God's help. There's no way that we can do this without this relationship that Jack is talking about, a vital daily relationship with God. All of the things that we're going to be talking about in this seminar, really, that's the key. Because we could tell you, you know, what's really worked for us and what's good to do. But boy, the power to do it is something else. And only by God's grace do we really have the enabling power to put these things into practice. All right, let's get back to understanding. We rarely do, and we rarely give a lot of thought to this. I was reminded of this not too long ago when I had a conversation with a young bride of about 7 weeks. It had been an especially hectic last 2 weeks in their relationship, and she had felt that they really weren't communicating very well. And so it was Sunday afternoon, and they had a few moments alone, and they were laying there together on the bed, and she had her head in his chest. And there was this long, poignant silence. And then she said, what are you thinking? Now, gentlemen, if your wife ever asks you that question in those circumstances, please be thinking of them, okay? This one wasn't. He said, oh, I was just wondering what I should tell the boss tomorrow when he asked me about that project I was working on. And she said, oh. And then she waited. Now, gentlemen, what she was waiting for is for him to ask her what she was thinking. Got that? Okay, write it up here. He didn't. He said, well, are we going to have supper for you soon? And she said, maybe in a little while. And he said, oh, well, I'll be glad to teach you how to fix cage dogs. And she blew up. And he's thinking, of course, well, what an unreasonable wife. You know, here I am offering to help her get dinner. And she's furious about something. And she's thinking, this man I married doesn't have a clue as to what I really need. And it's just how to understand me. And then this conversation that I had with this bride was several weeks later. She'd never told him what was really on her heart in that afternoon. And as a result of this one incident, their marriage had really gone in two directions. And she was blowing up more and more frequently and getting very angry and feeling very misunderstood. And I'm sure he was feeling that she was a very unreasonable person. Now, she needed one of three things, if not all three, in this situation. And friends, we need these three at all times. She either needed humor. And let's never lose our sense of humor, huh? To be able to laugh at ourselves and each other. She needed to be able to laugh at this big lug and shake him and say, hey, you, I wanted you to be thinking about me right now. But she's probably too young a bride to have humor in this situation. Or she needed openness to be able to say, hey, that really hurt. I wanted you to be thinking about me because I'm feeling quite romantic right now, and I'm feeling like we really haven't been able to communicate in the last couple of weeks. Or she needed understanding about how her husband really thought, and that it really wasn't a personal affront when he was thinking about business instead of about her. But she had none of the three, and therefore her relationship was beginning to divide at that point. Now, before we get into some of these very practical areas, let me just say this, that love is a feeling to be learned. Walter Kirby says that in a little book, but it's true. We learn love, and we learn it from God. And we learn to love each other. And so if I'm talking to people here who have felt that they've lost their love for one another, that's okay. Because God can not only give it to you all over again, but he can teach you how to really love deeply in the way that you all long to love that person you're married to. But also, all of the things that we're talking about begin with you. The greatest prayer that you can pray in a marriage is, Lord, save, change this marriage beginning with me. Or save this marriage beginning with me. From a little book called Magic in Marriage, it says this. Many women have asked wistfully, why could it not always be like it was when we were first married? Well, it can. The newness and the excitement die down, of course. And the froth subsides somewhat. Couples tend to get used to anything in time. But a deep romantic love can continue as if the soul is being fed by some inner spring. If you have lost that love, the fountain hasn't dried up. You have ceased to tap it. That's all. This is true not only of marriage, but of life itself. Everything about living can begin to pall unless we have hidden resources to replenish what is being depleted. All of life was intended to be a vibrant experience. But you see, that begins with me. If God, in making me a whole person, a fulfilled person, a happy person, if he does that for me, then I can bring that much more into a relationship, you see. And it takes two whole, complete people to make the very best kind of marriage. But you see, what God has for us is that he wants us to become together so much more than either of us could become individually. That, to me, is exciting. Not that I'm just half a couple, but that couple can become more, those people can become more than they ever could have as individuals. And Jeff and I have seen that happen, and it's really beautiful. Paul Pompano, a noted marriage counselor, says that in his opinion, these differences that we're going to talk about are the greatest cause for distress in marriage, not understanding these differences and allowing them to fit together. So as I go through some of these things, just about Jack and me, try to pinpoint yourself and then try to pinpoint your partner. And there'll be varying degrees, of course. First of all, Jack is very objective in his personality. And I am very subjective in mine. Does that need to be focused? said it. To Jack, a fact is a fact is a fact. He takes a more detached view of things. Whereas, for me, a fact is never quite a fact. It's just a little bit more than a fact or a little bit less than a fact, depending on how I look at it. I have a hard time being detached about anything. Now, of course, the implications of this are vast. Jack sees things much more realistically than I do. He sees the bigger picture. He can see to the future better than I can. He thinks in concept form much better than I do. Now, let me give you a word of warning here, you wives who may be subjective and your husbands are objective. No matter how much your husband seems to be very objective with other men, he is not objective with you. Okay? In other words, that those two men can get together and really talk and tell each other the facts and argue back and forth, but let you say the same thing, and he stops being objective. So that's just a word of warning. In being subjective, I take things personally almost 100% of the time. Now, for a couple who is this way, if a man and a woman, for instance, come over to our house for dinner, and the man would ask us, where'd you get this meat? Jack would say, well, at the corner grocery. And I would say, why? What's wrong with it? Jack would say, the Joneses are busy and can't come tomorrow. And I'll say, I wonder what we did to offend them. Now, of course, this subjectivity, if a woman is subjective, tends to make her want the security of her husband's present job rather than thinking about changing jobs, tends to want the here and now, have a harder time looking to see what the future is really going to be. Now, sometimes this subjectiveness borders on the ridiculous. For instance, a man might go to his wife and say, honey, you've been working so hard all week, cooking and cleaning. Tonight, I'm going to take you out for a good dinner. I see more women got that than men. Because a woman tends to pick up the good dinner. What have I been cooking for you all week? And believe it or not, gentlemen, we can get hurt over a beautiful offer like that. But we'll never tell you. Now, this is our fault. I mean, we subjective people, it's our fault. And we'll be talking about communications tomorrow and how we can try to avoid all that hidden, coded message that comes across where it shouldn't, and how we need to really talk about these things. But you see, if that woman really understands her husband's thinking, she's not going to take offense at a very beautiful offer like that. Subjective people have a terrible time taking teasing well. There's no way that you can call me chubby that I am going to take it right. So if you're wondering why that person that you're living with doesn't take teasing well, maybe you better examine it. Did they take things personally? And you see, I can't help it. I'm working on this. You know, I know that Jack doesn't mean for me to take things personally. And so my head tells me he didn't mean it that way. My heart says, ouch. And it's hard sometimes for me to get my head and my heart all connected upright. He realizes that and tries to be very careful about situations like this. And I appreciate that about it. You know, we'll be talking about this a little bit later, too, but let me just throw in here, because this is so vital. In any relationship, the acceptance of the other person. Not to try to change them, but accepting them. And I think of all of the qualities of Jack Mahal that I love, this would be one of the ones at the top of my list. Acceptance. And I can't tell you how much that means to me. Now, man tends to be, Jack tends to be, essential-minded. And I tend to be very detail-minded. Remember his illustration of the woman who can cook the soup and listen to her child practice on the scales and the piano and another write a letter to Santa Claus. Well, a lot of women are built that way. They're detail-minded. The ones that aren't have a little handicap when they have three children. And they have to pray for extra grace to handle all those details. Most mothers need to be detail-minded. And I am this way. But because a man doesn't think in detail, a woman can think very often that he's not interested in what she thinks. For instance, Jack can go to a week-long conference, have a multitude of variety of experiences, and come home, and I can say, "Honey, tell me all about the conference." And he tells me all about the conference in 10 minutes flat. Now, I used to think he doesn't care enough to really tell me about that conference. But you see, I found out that he was telling me about that conference. Because he thinks in concept form. He zeroes in on the main thing, and he tells me about that. Now, on the other hand, he's learning to jot down who's going to have babies and who's engaged and the best meal he had at the conference and fill in some of those little details for me. You who are detail-minded, have you ever started to tell your husband about your next-door neighbor, the one whose husband ran for Senate? You know, his secretary was the one that was divorced last year. She had the maiden aunt that was in the insane asylum for a while. And you're looking at your husband, and all of a sudden, his eyes are sort of crossed. And they're glazed. And you're thinking, why, he's not listening to me. And you're right. Well, friends, you see, at this point, we can start thinking, oh, he's not interested in me. And you know the way a woman's mind works, gentlemen? I'll give you a little secret here. Almost always, we subjective women anyway, we think, oh, he's not interested in what I'm telling him. That means he's not interested in me. That means he doesn't love me the way I really want him to love me. Consciously or subconsciously, our minds work that way, and it boils down to your love for us. And especially subjective people, you see, we need a constant reassurance of love anyhow. We need to be told, expressed, written on the mirror, anyway. We need to be reassured that you really do love us. And so our minds work this way. Now, because a woman is detail-minded, she is impressed by and distracted by a lot of little things. The accidental and the incidental. I am. Jack will say, "That's a good-looking car, but how does it run?" That's the essential point, you see. And I'll say, "I just don't like the color." That's the detail. Now, friends, that's not wrong. It's just different. And we need each other, you see, to fit together. Jack will say, I like that speaker's ideas. And I'll say, did you notice that his shirt matched his tie? Jack will say, that's a well-constructed house. And I'll say, oh, but the wallpaper in the master bedroom was hideous. This actually happened not too long ago. A friend of ours wanted me to look through a house that he was about to buy with him. And so I went out to see this house. And I came back, and the girl that was staying with us was very interested in it also. And she said, tell me about the house. And I said, oh, it's the neatest house. And this one bedroom, the wallpaper matched the blinds. And this other bedroom that was blue and green. And there were these kinds of bookshelves. And on I went. And this fellow, Bob, looked at me and as though I were describing a totally strange house. And he said, you're kidding, Carol. Were all those things in that house? And I said, of course. He had not seen one of them. But he had seen the furnace. And the humidifier, you know, and pounded the walls. Now, isn't that great? How we can fit together. Someone has said that God gave us two eyes to see things from a slightly different point of view. You see, when we only have one eye, we lose all dimension. We see things in the flat. We lose the roundness of things. But when we have two eyes, we gain dimension and perspective. Marriage is like that. And how terrible to think that you've got to see out of just one eye. God gave us two personalities to see things from a slightly different point of view so that we'll have dimension. But the whole point is learning how to use these differences instead of getting frustrated by them. Jack tends to be much more logical. In his thinking. And I am much more emotional in mine. Jack is inclined to study the evidence, and in a step-by-step reasoning process, we'll reach a conclusion. On the other hand, I rely much on intuition, instinct, emotion to reach the conclusion. Many times the same conclusion. Now, let me show you how beautifully this can fit together. I've heard a lot of men say, oh, my wife and her intuition. And they write it off. And I think that, what a shame. Someone has suggested that actually intuition is a mind for detail. In other words, you can go into a situation, you pick up 20 little things, that raised eyebrow, that tone of voice, that look, and you feed them into your computer, and it comes out intuition, a feeling. But it's a correct feeling, a great deal of the time. So Jack has learned in our relationship to use this. And we'll go into a situation many, many times. And we'll come out and he'll say, Carol, how did you feel about that situation? And I'll tell him. Now, I can't tell him why I feel that way. You know, I'm not aware of all these things that were fed into this little computer up here. But I have a feeling about this. On the other hand, he filters that back through the grid of his objectivity, my information, you see. He'll go back into that situation again and really get the facts on what I felt. And if I'm right, he can use it. If I'm wrong, he hasn't lost anything either. So it's beautiful the way God has created us in this way. Now, logical people think in a straight line, like that. Emotional people think and lots of times talk all around it. Now, I'm not sure why this is. I wish I had this all scoped out so I can say why we are like we are. But it could be because we're sensitive. We emotional people are sensitive, and therefore we're afraid if we go right to it like that, we'll hurt you or you'll hurt us. And so, to avoid that, we'll talk all the way around it. For instance, we're about to leave for a dinner engagement, and I'll say, I suppose I really ought to go change. And Jack will say, well, why don't you? And I'll say, don't you like what I've got on? And he'll say, well, it's okay, but you said you were going to change. And I say, well, I was just saying that to see if it was okay not to. And Jack kind of shrugs, poor thing. I admit, it's complicated living with most of it. Now, this, too, has to do with a need for a constant reassurance of just love. I need to be constantly reassured that he loves me. And he does this. And I appreciate it. Now, with you logical people, one word of warning here. Men, lots of times in our society, of course, are told that men ought not to cry. You ought to be the strong one. You ought to be the John Wayne strong, silent type to be a real man. And we know, of course, that that's not true. And what you need to do, you logical people, you need to really work at getting in touch with your emotions. Because only as you get in touch with your emotions are you going to be able to communicate on the depth level of communication. And most of us wives long to communicate with you on that level. And a great many husbands fail on this very point. We'll be coming back to that tomorrow. Now, if you're a woman who works in the home rather than out of her home, you will find that you tend to identify with your home. And a man will identify with his life work. And you see little... Okay. Now, just a word on this, because this is an important one for some of you. A man tends to think of his work or his ministry or his job as an extension of his personality. A woman, when she's not working outside of the home, thinks of her home as that extension of her personality many times. Therefore, men, when you neglect something around the home that your wife has asked you to do, you know, 20 times, you don't realize it, but she often can think that you are neglecting her. She takes it personally. Because the home is an extension of her personality. Now, wives, the reverse is true. If you're neglecting something that your husband's asked you to do in connection with his job and his work, and you're neglecting it because it's 20th down on your priority list, he can take it as a personal rejection and feel that you're neglecting him. Or you may not look at it that way at all. It's important thing just to talk about whether you really feel this way or not. And why sometimes you're getting these angry feelings because your spouse is neglecting something and you're not even aware of what the other one is doing. Now, Jack, uses speech to convey facts and ideas. I use speech to express feelings and emotions. Now, friends, this is an important one to understand about one another. Let me show you what I mean. We're looking at a big, gorgeous moon up there in the sky. And I say, isn't that a beautiful moon? Now, what am I saying? But see, what I'm really saying is, oh, that moon really makes me feel romantic. A feeling that makes me feel romantic. Now, if Jack comes back with, yeah, that's bright enough to shoot a golf ball by. He did that once. But he was kidding. By that time, he knew exactly what I was saying. But if he was serious in coming back in that, see, I would be very hurt. Because I would think that he should have picked up my feeling, and he would not have had a clue as to the fact that I was expressing a feeling. Now, we do this a great deal, even when we're not realizing what we're doing. For instance, it can be raining outside. And you look out, I look out, and I say, oh, it's raining outside. Well, what am I expressing? Could be a couple of things. Could be I'm saying, oh, it's raining outside. That makes me feel depressed. Or, oh, that makes me feel energetic. I'm going to clean house like crazy. The chances are I would be expressing a feeling. Jack would say, it's raining outside. What is he saying? He is simply saying that the heavens have parted and little drops of moisture are falling to the ground. He is expressing a fact, and I am expressing a feeling. What about you? When you talk, what do? We were, I backed a car out of the garage one day, and I turned a little too sharp, and I took a piece of the garage with the fender. And I rushed into the house, and I said, oh, honey, I feel just terrible. Oh, you can't imagine how I felt inside when I heard the car go crash. And Jack stopped me just like that. And he says, never mind all that. Tell me what happened. Well, friends, I'll be very honest with you. A few years before I really studied my man, I would have dissolved into tears right then and there. And I probably would have cried all afternoon. Because I would have thought, he doesn't care how I'm feeling. If he doesn't care how I'm feeling, he doesn't care about me. If he doesn't care about me, he doesn't love me the way I want him to love me. And it would have been hours or days before we would have really gotten this straightened out. Now, Jack's a tremendous person. He's the greatest person in the world, and I believe that with all my heart. And we've always had a good thing going. But some of these things, literally because I did not understand my sweetheart, I have spent hours crying. Simply because of this very thing. What about you? We were presenting a seminar one time, and I just got through talking about this. And we were going off to the next session, and Jack said, what kind of perfume were you wearing? And I said, Taboo. And he said, oh, it smells different. And I said, well, I'm sorry you don't like it. And he said, I didn't say I didn't like it. I said, well, you didn't say you did like it. She said, I like it. But you see, just a simple little thing like that, I read into. And I assume, when he said it smelled different, that he didn't like it. Now, friends, we're always assuming things like that. We all do it. probably sensitive people are more apt to do it, but we all do it. And we've got to learn to communicate on these things. And as I said, we'll be talking about that tomorrow. But tonight, as you go home, and I think Jack will, are we going to take 5 minutes now and then discuss it? We're going to ask you just to start discussing where you are in this, just before you go home and before Jack finishes on this. But also, we would ask you to really make this a matter of prayer. God is the one who gives wisdom. And God is the one who gives understanding. And every single day of our lives as couples, we should be praying, Lord, help us to fall more in love with each other. Help us to understand each other more. Help me to understand Him. Help me to accept Him. Help us to become as a couple more than we could be as individuals. And I like to close with just a poem because this is the way I feel tonight. I love you, not only for what you are, but for what of our lives as couples. We should be praying, Lord, help us to fall more in love with each other. Help us to understand each other more. Help me to understand Him. Help me to accept Him. Help us to become as a couple more than we could be as individuals. I like to close with just a poem because this is the way I feel tonight. I love you, not only for what you are, but for what I am when I'm with you. I love you not only for what you have made of yourself, but for what you are making of me. I love you for the part of me that you bring out. I love you for putting your hand into my heaped up heart and passing over all the foolish, weak things that you can't help dimly seeing there, and for drawing out into the light all the beautiful belongings that no one else had looked quite far enough to find. I love you because you are helping me to make out of the lumber of my life not a cavern, but a temple. Out of the work of my everyday, not a reproach, but a song.
Thank you, honey. We'd like to have you do something together now. You've heard Carol talking about these differences that exist between the two of us, and I'm sure that you as married couples especially have identified with all of these in one way or another on one side of the fence. And as she mentioned at the outset, it may be that you men in some ways identify with some of the so-called feminine characteristics and you women so-called masculine, but that's not the point. The point is to understand one another. So we'd like to have you take about 5 or 6 minutes right now, those of you who are married couples, and turn to one another and begin to talk about this together and identify some things that have happened just maybe in the last week or so that you have, I'm sure, thought about as she has been sharing these things with you, and just talk about it together. The subjective and objective, the essential-minded, detail-minded, the logical-emotional response, the woman identifying with the home, the man identifying with his wife's work, and for the most part, the woman using speech to convey feelings and emotions, and the man using speech to convey facts and ideas. So let's take about 5 minutes. Now, those of you who are not married, we got a little problem here. But what I'd like to have you do is just think about it. How do you identify yourself in these categories? And it can become a little bit of an exercise in understanding yourself, and since you don't have a mate yet. Okay? The time is yours. Hey. That's a beginning. One of the reasons that Carol and I will be keeping the husbands and the wives, all of you here, together during the whole session is simply to encourage you to do what we just asked you to do, and that is to begin to communicate on some of these matters if you have not done it in the past, including the matter of sex. We used to, when we got to that delicate subject, which we will get to tomorrow afternoon, she would take the wives and I would take the husbands, and we would go off and cloister ourselves, and then the wives would never know what I said to the husbands, and the husbands would never know what Carol said to the wives. And we realized that we were defeating one of the very things that we want to try and get across, and that is to communicate in every area of the marriage relationship. And I'm sure that for some of you, this little exercise in just talking about the differences has been an interesting beginning, and it's been fun, and we hope you will continue. Now let me just wrap it up by suggesting two or three other things that are differences which we need to recognize in our lives. Or they can be, I'll put it that way. They happen to be between Carol and me. Family background can, in some cases and in many cases, make quite a difference in the attitudes that you bring together as marriage partners. For instance, Carol came from a family that was very affectionate in the outward expression of how they felt about one another. Now, both of us came from Christian homes, and there was never any doubt in my mind that my folks loved me. But there was very little outward affection of that love. For instance, kissing was not a common thing in our family. In Carol's family, man alive, everybody kissed everybody. Now, when we got married, there were some adjustments that needed to be made between the two of us simply because of that difference in our family background. And it was me that had to make most of the adjustments, because I didn't want to thwart her affection. So I began to learn to express it more openly than I did when I was a kid in our home. Now, I have to admit, there are still some delicate and difficult situations for me to get used to as a result of her family. For instance, at Christmas time, we'll be with some of her family, and she's got a nephew who's about 22 years old now. And when we give him a Christmas present, and he comes over to the couch and kisses me for it, it's still a little bit of an adjustment for me to get used to. But that's the way life is. It could be that there are differences that the two of you have as a husband and a wife simply because of the way you were raised in your home. But you've never stopped to think about that. That's why she is that way. That's why he does it that way. Because of mom and dad. Because that's the way it was done in your home. And this can cover a whole panorama of things. The way you celebrate Christmas or Easter or holidays or birthdays. Her family may have never celebrated any kind of a holiday, you know, kind of gave Christmas a passing glance. Whereas on the Your side of the family always recognized holidays. Christmas was a big deal at your house. Birthdays, man, you never forgot birthdays. It was a big party every year for everybody in the family. Well, that can be quite a difference and can create real tension if it isn't gotten out, talked about, and what are you going to do about it? How are you going to resolve these differences? Another thing is the introvert-extrovert difference, which Carol just referred to. And if I were to identify the two of us, I would identify her as tending toward being the extrovert. I would identify me as tending toward being the introvert. I am more quiet, reserved, conservative. She is bubbly, outgoing, effervescent, vivacious. One time we had a young couple came through town, stayed overnight with us. We'd had breakfast together, the four of us, and the gals went off shopping or to do something, and he and I were sitting there drinking a third or fourth cup of coffee, and we were chatting about this, that, and the other thing. And finally, he got pretty serious, and he said, "You know, Jack," he says, "I've noticed that your wife and my wife are quite a bit of alike," and he mentioned these things that I just talked about, tending towards the extroverted side of things. He says, "I've noticed that you and I are somewhat alike." And he described us as tending toward the introverted type. Then he asked me a very significant question. He says, "How do you handle that problem?" I said, "What problem?" Because to me, it was not a problem. God has brought Carol and I together with our different temperaments, our different personalities, to complement and blend together as a team, to be able to use as assets together. Now, this guy's attitude toward his wife's personality characteristics or temperament type was he was looking upon them as a problem, and I found out later, even as a threat to him, because he was more quiet, was more reserved, and she was bubbly and outgoing and a good conversationalist, and being in a crowd was no threat to her, whereas to him, he was always a little bit intimidated by a group of people, and the difference to him was a threat. And rather than looking upon that as an asset in his wife and capitalizing upon it and learning to capitalize upon it, he was looking at it as a problem, and they'd been married for 2 or 3 years. Now, for instance, let me tell you how I capitalize upon that. Just one little homey illustration. Since I am more conservative, more objective, as she says, more essential-minded, as she says, which I admit I am, I hate small talk. When I find myself in a situation, whether, you know, it's the weather or last week's football game, and this is the whole tenor of the conversation, hour upon hour, when you're with some other group of people, my mind begins to wonder. Now, through my eyeballs, I look very intelligent. You know, I look like I'm taking in every bit of the conversation, and if you were to look me straight in the eye, you would think I was grasping everything that is being said. But my wife looks at me, and she knows that my mind is probably 1,000 miles away. And when she recognizes that certain look in my eye, she picks up the ball, carries the conversation, and does a beautiful job, and nobody knows where I am. Now, brother, that is an asset. Enough said. Another difference that can cause problems if you don't deal with it, get it out in the open, and understand that there are differences here between the two of you. I tend to be a perfectionist. Carol tends to be, well, not sloppy, but she does things fast. Speedy Mayhall, she's known as. Now, when we first got married, this was this was quite a problem between the two of us. It would rear its ugly head every once in a while. My tendency would be, if you can't do it right, don't do it. And so on many occasions, I would tend to procrastinate because I didn't have time to do it right, and so it wouldn't get done. On the other hand, Carol would, you know, shove right on into the project and man, it'd get done. But brother, well, we have learned, both of us, to make a few slight changes. I am no longer the perfectionist that I used to be. I've compromised some, and she has too. And we've learned to capitalize upon these two things, characteristics that God built into us that are different. And we operate as a team. We get a lot more complex that way. Now let me just mention one other thing, and then I'm going to summarize the whole thing real quick for tonight. Carol referred to women's intuition. Boy, I am a strong believer in that. And this is something that I feel some of you gals have as a strength, and it's a unique thing that God has built into you. But guys, if we fail to capitalize and look upon that as an asset in our wives, if they have that, we are really missing to capitalize upon one of their great strengths and assets. Carol is probably my best and most used counselor because of this thing. She sees things from a different point of view than I do. And I've recognized that. And she said she can walk into a situation and she'll pick up 20 little things that I'll totally miss. And we'll talk about it later, and she'll mention how she feels about it. And then that gives me the opportunity to weigh that against my own thinking on the matter. And if I want to take her feeling back into the situation and talk to this guy or that guy or somebody else, but just to double check. It's a tremendous asset in a wife, guys, if you've got it, and we ought to capitalize on it and use it. Now, tomorrow morning, we're going to be talking about husbands loving their wives, and then later on, we're going to be talking about the husband's role as leader. And this comes into play in the leadership role of a husband, in knowing the strength and the gift that his wife has and learning to capitalize on it. We'll be going into more on that on Sunday afternoon. But in summary, I could use four words that relate to this whole matter of the differences between a man and a woman. Knowing your mate, understanding your mate, adjusting to your mate, and accepting your mate. Knowing has to do with study. To study them, as Carol quoted from someone, as you would study a rare exotic animal, which they are. Understanding them. This has to do with communication, getting it out in the open, talking about it, and prayer. Asking God for wisdom to understand that strange guy that you're married to, or that funny kooky gal that you're married to, that you love so madly. Adjusting has to do with a willingness and an openness on my part to change, to adjust to him, to adjust to her, so that we do fit together. And fourthly, accepting is really an aspect of love, isn't it? It's a part of loving your mate. And so I'd like to just close in prayer tonight, and And the thing that I would pray for you and for Carol and myself is for an openness to one another and to God. And secondly, a willingness to forgive and forget. And then thirdly, a real endeavor on the part of both of us together and you as a couple to work at being kind to one another. So let's pray, shall we? Our Heavenly Father, we thank you for this wonderful thing that you've invented called marriage. It's a lifetime project, Lord, of give and take, of changing, of adapting, of understanding, of accepting. And I pray that each of us here, husband or wife, will be open to you and to what you have to teach us about yourself from your word and to the experiences that we encounter on a daily basis to do what you want us to do. To be, as the scriptures say, obedient to the known and revealed will of God. And then, Lord, that we'll be open to one another. Take away feelings of stubbornness, of pride. Remove from our hearts bitterness, quickness of temper, and give us a new and deeper appreciation for that one whom we have vowed to love to the death of his part. And Lord, give us the ability to forgive, even as God, for Christ's sake, has forgiven us, that we would learn to be good forgivers. And then teach us what it means to be kind, to be thoughtful, to be loving to one another. And as we continue to talk about these things tomorrow, Lord, I pray that you will open the eyes of our understanding and help us to apply that which the Spirit of God says to each of us in his own unique way. Lord, we realize that you reserve the right to be unique with each of us. And so we just open our hearts to you and say, show me, Lord Jesus, what it is you want me to know and to understand and to act upon. For we pray these things in his name. Amen.